You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
This is Alex Smith. You have heard about giant plumes of oil hidden under the Gulf of Mexico. Dr. Samantha B. Joy is a professor in the Department of Marine Sciences at the University of Georgia. She has just returned from a research vessel in the Gulf of Mexico investigating those oil plumes from the leaking Deepwater Horizon well. Dr. Joy, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Well, I really appreciate your taking the time for us. In a few minutes, I want to ask you just quickly about a couple of fantastic rumors of doom sweeping the internet, but I really want to start with the science. Can you tell us about your recent journey to the Gulf of Mexico?
Sure. So we departed on a small research vessel, the Walton Smith, that's run out of the University of Miami. And we had a suite of instrumentation, both optical and acoustic, so using both light and sound to track the distribution of oil and other materials in the water column around the Deepwater Horizon leaking wellhead. And the goal of our work was really to follow up on a previous research cruise on board the research vessel Pelican, where they had first discovered underwater plumes of oil around the leaking wellhead. And during our two-week cruise, we confirmed the Pelican findings and found that there are, in fact, these underwater plumes that are characterized by high concentrations of both dissolved gas as well as oil and dissolved organic carbon. And the plumes have, you know, elevated rates of microbial activity in addition to these elevated rates of microbial substrates, which is what you might expect.
So what does it mean that the microbes are busy on this?
Well, most of the organisms right now that are eating the oil and gas in the water are oxygen consumers. So they respire oxygen just like we respire oxygen. And by carrying out their regular metabolism, they consume oxygen and deplete it from the water. And the problem is that eventually, if they sustain the rates of activity that they're expressing right now, the concern is that they'll draw oxygen levels down below those which support larger animals. And that magic threshold is around 2 milligrams of oxygen per liter.
So we could get some dead zones.
We could get low oxygen water that basically is not hospitable and not inhabitable by any organism that requires oxygen. So effectively, you know, deep sea, hypoxic, anoxic waters.
Well, as you know, in the early days of the spill, NOAA based the magnitude of leaking oil on the sheen as seen from space. And then, as you say, the Pelican found these underwater plumes, and BP CEO Tony Hayward said they didn't exist because oil always floats to the surface. Why did these plumes form in this particular accident?
Well, the difference between the Deepwater Horizon and all other previous drilling accidents is the water depth. We're talking about a very deep water column here, 5,000 feet. And when you introduce oil and gas at that water depth in the manner in which it's being introduced, basically it's being forced at a very high velocity out of a very small orifice, about a 21-inch pipe, you're fractionating it and breaking it into small particles. And it doesn't take a very small particle. You know, you can get it down to, you know, hundreds of microns or thereabouts. And when you do that, then the surface tension of the particle, it is greater than the buoyancy force pushing the particle up. So the surface tension is holding it down, and that force is greater than the buoyancy force that's making it want to rise, so it stays underwater. And this is something that has been shown in models, both theoretically and in the laboratory. So it really is not a difficult thing to imagine and understand why this would happen at this water depth and under these conditions.
Perhaps related to the size of those particles, some people are now changing the terms, moving from the word plume to the idea of a cloud. How should we understand what is really down there? It's not thick, gooey black oil, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. It is not thick, gooey black oil. And if you looked at the water, only when you're very close to the leaking wellhead can you even detect oil with your eye. The water looks a little turbid, so cloudy, like a thick microbial culture, if you would. But it certainly doesn't look like the surface water with the, you know, thick, tarry mats of oil on it. These are very fine particles that are invisible to your eye under most conditions. And you need very sensitive instrumentation to document the presence of these particles. And that's what the optical instruments do for us. They give us a signal of the presence of molecules that are basically invisible to your actual eye.
Is it fair to say that this is a new and presumably almost unknown risk, particularly with deep sea drilling that could, happen at other deep sea drilling projects elsewhere in the world?
I think it's only new in the sense that I think everybody is aware of this now. In fact, the Minerals Management Service funded a study back in 2000. The report was published in 2001 and released publicly a few years after that. It was called Project Deep Spill, and the point of the study was to look and see what would happen if you introduced, if you had an oil and gas spill in deep water. And in that study, I believe the water depth was around 2,000 feet instead of 5,000 feet. But they found very similar things, a large fraction of the gas, the dissolved gas, and a good bit of the oil that was released at this depth stayed underwater for weeks to months. So it certainly shouldn't have come as a surprise to anybody in the oil industry that there were going to be deep water features when this spill happened. There have been other modeling studies and papers written based on empirical data that have reinforce the idea that you would get underwater concentrations of oil and gas if you had a deep water blowout. And in fact, the deeper water you're drilling in, the more likely this is going to be because you're dealing with colder water and higher pressure, which is going to facilitate the trapping of gas in particular at depth.
Are we talking one or several plumes? And if so, how big are they?
Well, there's been at least two plumes that I feel like have been robustly documented. That the first is the plume that's sort of to the southwest of the well, and that's the one that my group and the group from Mississippi, the Pelican Cruise PIs, Vernon Asper and Arnie Dierks found that plume originally, and we followed up and did a lot of the geochemical analyses and microbiology on those plumes. And that plume is about 10 miles, a minimum of 10 miles long and about 3 miles wide and at least 200 meters thick. In most places, some places it's 400 meters thick. There's a plume to the northeast of the well site that's on the order of 26 miles long, 6 miles wide, and hundreds and hundreds of meters thick. So these are large scale features, and I think that it's likely that there are others that we don't yet know about. So I feel it's really important for the oceanographic community to keep a presence out there and keep looking for and tracking these features.
As awful as all this is, it's also a new frontier for science. What research needs to be done next?
Well, I think the big question is how fast material in these plumes is going to be degraded using standard microbial processes that are happening naturally in the water, and what factors are going to limit the microbial degradation of oil and gas in these waters. And we really don't understand that, and to sort of the first step in this study is to map the distribution and see how the features are changing, and then you want to try and get an understanding of which microorganisms and which microbial processes are important and relevant and how fast they're going and what's regulating the speed at which they're proceeding. And that requires laboratory studies. And then once you know the plumes, dimensions, and characteristics chemically, and which microbial groups are sort of chewing up the different parts of the plume, the gas versus the oil, you can begin to make models to sort of explain and forecast what will happen in these plumes over time, how they'll evolve, and what kinds of processes will come into play. And I think that's what we want to get, is to a predictive level where we can really understand how the systems are working. But that's going to take quite some time. That's definitely not something that you do in a couple of months. That's years or more of research effort. But I think, we have a situation now that's unfolding each day, and it's really necessary, and it's a responsibility that we all have who are working out there to try and contribute as much as we can to further the understanding of these features and help everybody understand and appreciate how important they are and how they're going to change over time and what their ultimate impact will be on the Gulf system.
Yeah, certainly. The government needs to know. The responders need to know. And we, the public, need to know. I'd like to change up a bit and ask your opinion about some very frightening theories flooding the airwaves and the internet. Bear with me for a second. The story goes like this. The giant cavity of oil will leak up for months, say, and then at some point the pressure of the deep will drive seawater down into the very hot earth miles down. That water will become superheated steam, explode violently like a volcano, and cause a tsunami. tsunami, which will wipe out the Gulf Coast and wash over Florida. From what you know so far, does that sound scientifically plausible?
Not really. And the problem, you have a huge pressure gradient right now going from the reservoir to the seafloor. And that pressure gradient is generated by gas concentration. So the gas is at, when it's pressurized and contained, everything's fine in the reservoir. Well, the reservoir has been punctured, if you will, and the gas and oil are now flowing out. Well, when equilibrium is reached, when there's no pressure gradient from the reservoir to the pipe at the seafloor, then there's no pressure gradient. So there's no force pushing seawater into the system. So effectively, you're going to reach a point where the pressure is nil, and certainly there can be some trickling of seawater into that pipe. You know, you could get some seawater into the reservoir, but it's not going to be at a huge rate because the pressure gradient is equalized between the reservoir and the overlying seawater. So to get seawater into the reservoir, you'd have to have a pressure gradient pushing water from the ocean into the reservoir. Does that make sense? And really, that's just not a situation that is going to be feasible, because remember that reservoir is hotter than the overlying seawater. So you really have to take a lot of energy to push that material into the reservoir, and that's just very unlikely to happen.
Well, all right. There's another hot theory out there. This story builds on the known fact that the Macondo field contains an inordinate amount of methane or natural gas. Some pundits predict a god-awful explosion of methane, which will cause the seafloor of the Gulf to either rise or sink and, again, create a deadly tsunami. How credible would you find that?
Well, again, the issue is the speed at which you're taking, you know, expelling gas from the reservoir. And really, you'd have to ignite that gas underwater in all likelihood, and that's not going to happen. And that sort of is linked in some ways, that question, to another one of those theories that I've seen, and that several people have asked me about. Why don't we just blow the well up? Why don't we set off a dynamite charge to just collapse the well on itself? Well, the answer to that is there is a lot of gas down there, and the last thing we want to do is set off a dynamite charge around it. But, you know, in the absence of a dynamite charge, it's very unlikely that this stuff's going to ignite on the, you know, under the ocean and explode and create a giant tsunami. That would be one of those one in a quadrillion type events, and I just don't see that happening. But I think that it's really important for people to keep in mind that that's one of the reasons the amount of methane in this reservoir is the reason that we cannot and should not ever consider setting off a dynamite charge or any other charge for that matter to close this well up, because there is a lot of gas in the system, and if you set off a dynamite charge, you could blow a big hole in the Gulf of Mexico, and that would not be good.
Have you heard about other cracks in the seafloor away from the wellhead that are leaking oil or methane?
I have heard many rumors along those lines, but I have yet to see any data that convinces me that the rumors are true or gives any credence to them. So I, you know, those data could be out there and I haven't seen them, but all I can tell you is I haven't seen anything that makes me conclude that there are ruptures in the seafloor emanating from the wellhead. There are a lot of natural seeps in the Gulf of Mexico, more than 1,000, you know, many, many, many natural seeps. And all of those natural seeps discharge oil and gas at very low rates relative to the well. And, you know, I know there have been some NOAA cruises, for example, that have documented some natural seepage along the seafloor, but nothing that made me think, oh, there's a rupture in the seafloor. I don't think that we're anywhere close to making that conclusion conclusively at this point.
Well, as we wrap up, can you tell us, what is your JOY research group doing now?
Well, we're still processing samples from the Walton Smith cruise. We probably will be doing that for at least another 2 weeks. I'm working on a couple of papers describing our results and, you know, basically generating data plots and whatnot to provide the NOAA and other responders so they can use the data that we've generated to sort of guide additional efforts. But really, we're just pushing through trying to finish the data analyses before we go out on the next cruise, which is about 2.5 weeks from now.
We have been talking undersea science with Dr. Samantha B. Joy, a professor in the Department of Marine Sciences at the University of Georgia and head of the Joy Research Group. You can follow the story at the University of Georgia Gulf Oil blog. Go to gulfblog.uga.edu. Dr. Joy, thank you so much for sharing your valuable time with our listeners.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks a lot for your interest.